WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook.
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob D. Benedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That is, as you know by now, the one that's always right in front of you right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what the vast majority of us really do want. I am happy to have in the studio with us today our longtime Healthy Planet board member and unfailing volunteer, Catherine Congdon. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you, Bob. It's always such a pleasure to be here.
And while the good news is that I've got Catherine here with me, the bad news is that today's show is not about the good news. While I hesitate to do even one show without that as the focus, sometimes it's good to show some of the not so positive side of things. So you, our listeners, get a real sense of where we stand on the issue of environmental regulations under the Trump administration.
And I'm going to break in here. This is Bob DiBenedetto in 2024. What you're listening to is a show from 2019. And this was after the Trump administration had gone through most of its 4 years, and we had experienced all there was to experience about their environmental policy, about the basically the mockery they've made of the environment by putting an oil lobbyist in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, and so much more. What you're about to hear is a listing, which will be explained in the segment itself, but it's a listing of the environmental regulations that Trump was in the process of or had already succeeded in killing. Now, I'm not saying that those withstood the test of time, because fortunately, the current administration came in and reversed a lot of what he had done there. And much of the damage was mitigated because of the incompetency of the administration under Trump. With that said, though, it's important to note that if he gets in for a second term in 2024, the damage that he could potentially do will be much greater, because you will not have level-headed people keeping him back from what he wants to do. But now, as we can see, he's much more unrestrained. And a very recent story illustrates this. I'm quoting from the High Country News. This April, at a steak dinner with oil and gas executives at the Mar-a-Lago Club in Florida, former President Donald Trump made a request, backed by a hefty promise. If the CEOs in attendance raised $1 billion to support his re-election bid, he would lower their taxes and eviscerate environmental and public health protections once he became president. According to reporting by the Washington Post, Trump promised to reverse dozens of Biden administration policies, including a moratorium on approvals for liquefied natural gas exports, new restrictions on Arctic drilling, and many regulations of oil and gas drilling on public land. For good measure, he'd also scrap electric vehicle mandates and bring an immediate end to all offshore wind development. Judging from Trump's record, he fully intends to fulfill these promises, and then some. And his mission will be backed by a playbook, alarming for its extreme approach, fashioned by a right-wing coalition intent on dismantling the administrative state. So it's obviously amazing that he could be pushing publicly for a $1 billion bribe. He was president for 4 years. We see what he's done to the environment. The best way to understand what's about to come is to understand what's happened. And that's what this show is about. This is a show from 2019. We go through the list of the regulations that he was set on destroying and the actions that he took to do so. These are actions against life-saving and environment-saving regulations, and you can determine whether these are important to you. Look, we all go to the ballot box with a different set of priorities and values. For those of you who have the environment as your priority, you're the target of this show. If you have other priorities that are more important to you than our life support system and the environment, then this will mean less to you, but it's still important because we all breathe air, and many of us have families and friends and people in our lives that we value, and our life support system, it impacts all of us and all of the people and animals that we know and love. And from an environmental perspective, this next Trump administration would be a very, very dangerous administration. So with that said, this show is about the environmental regulations that were attacked under the first and, from an environmental perspective, hopefully the only Trump administration. Now back to our 2019 show.
While this might sound wildly partisan, it's not. Has nothing to do with partisan politics to me. Really zero. If the Democrats were in power or any other party doing what this political party is doing to our life support system, something that has nothing to do with politics, I would be equally as clear and definitive in condemning their actions. And with that said, after a bit of an intro where I'll put some of what's happening into a broader perspective, we're going to be reading down a list compiled by the New York Times of 85 environmental rules rolled back under the Trump administration. And in addition to reading some of the list, we'll be adding some commentary for some of the items that will give you an idea of the implications of the regulations that are being removed. But before we go to that list, I'm going to point out that one of Donald Trump's early actions as president was to issue an executive order calling on every federal agency to loosen the regulatory reins on fossil fuel industries, and in effect, to strongly signal that climate change had no place in this administration's policies. All right, so you get that? We're not going to worry about climate change, basically. He directed all departments to identify and target for elimination any rules that restrict U.S. production of energy, and he set guidance to make it more difficult to put future regulations in place on coal, oil, and natural gas. The executive order was called the Executive Order on Promoting Energy Independence and Economic Growth. The primary aim was to remove as many obstacles as possible to fossil fuel development by undoing the Obama-era policies put in place to curb the nation's carbon emissions. Trump specifically ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to do a review of the Clean Power Plan that affected the power plants in the United States, which the Obama administration put in place to slash carbon pollution from coal plants. Before Trump's administration came in, climate change was taken into account for all major decisions by our federal government. But this assault on clean power and addressing climate change didn't start when President Trump was elected. I know he's vilified a lot, and I'm right with you in terms of condemning his environmental policies. I'm right there. But this happens before him. This was all planned by the Republicans in their documents called Republican Platform of 2016. The platform is nothing short of frightening. It's short-sighted, and it places profit ahead of health and any consideration of climate change. And at a time when virtually all the world's scientists were saying we needed to take sweeping action immediately, the Republican platform's perspective was that an unbridled extraction of fossil fuels was what America truly stood for. I don't get it. I still don't get it, but that is the truth. I'll quote a bit from the Republican 2016 platform. A new era in energy. Our country has greater energy resources than any other place on earth. Our engineers and miners, the men and women whose labor taps the forces of nature, are the best in the world. Together, the people of America's energy sector provide us with power that is clean, affordable, secure, and abundant. Their work can guarantee the nation's energy security for centuries to come. Sounds great. It's very inspiring, right? But this is put out talking about our clean, affordable, secure energy supply, which is basically gas, oil, coal, and nuclear. This came out in the face of whole towns burning from unprecedented wildfires, multi-year droughts that are causing geopolitical instability and problems on our southern border, superstorms, too many to name, from Harvey to Michael and Sandy, and now Dorian, unprecedented strength, storms with huge strength and rainfalls that are just bizarre and biblical, rising sea levels, with the 18 hottest years on record now having taken place in the last 19 years, and the 5 hottest years having taken place in the last 5 years, at a time when virtually all of the world's scientists were saying that the fossil fuels that are in the ground needed to stay in the ground in order to avoid the very worst impacts of climate change. The Republican platform went on to say, and I quote, "Keeping energy in the earth will keep jobs out of reach of those who need them most." So keeping energy in the earth, like the scientists say we need to do, will keep jobs out of the reach of those who need them most. So the Republican platform said it's all about jobs. Well, you know, you'd have to respect that if they really believed that we don't want anybody to suffer because they're out of a job. I would have to respect that because who wants people to be out of jobs? If it was about jobs, though, wouldn't it be true that their platform would change if information changed that showed that there are better ways to create jobs? Right? If they were really about jobs, wouldn't that be the case? I think so. If there was another form of energy that would create more jobs for more Americans in need of jobs going forward, that form of energy should well expect it to be the new darling of the Republican Party, no? Let's maximize job growth, right? Well, as I've mentioned many times before on this show, the Department of Energy, U.S. Energy and Employment Report of 2019 has given us some pretty interesting information. It stated that the vast majority of electric power generation comes from natural gas, coal, and nuclear power. So those forms of energy account for 80% of the nation's electricity. 80% from what we call dirty or dangerous energy. That's most of our electricity. So you got that? 80% from dirty or dangerous fossil fuels or nuclear. On the other hand, consider that solar and winds produce only about 8% of our electricity. Solar and winds, 8% of our electricity. Now here's the punchline in terms of jobs. Ready for the Republicans? You're going to change your stance after you hear this. Solar and winds together, which create only 8% of our electricity, I'm being redundant here for a reason, solar and winds employ more people than natural gas, coal, and nuclear power combined.
You've convinced me, Bob.
Well, I would convince any thinking person who's not held to an ideology that is simply there to sound good or for some other reason that I can't even imagine. If you're thinking about a policy and it's about jobs, this is going to sound good to you. So for all of you people who are out there who are Republicans, remember, this is nonpartisan. Hearing this, what we need you to do as part of a team that cares about this is speak up. Speak up to the people who you support. Tell them that, hey, I believe in all these other issues that you believe in, and so I'm a Republican, but I want you to acknowledge that if we're going to create jobs, we've got to put the money in solar and wind. That's your job. With that said, can you imagine the jobs that will be created as that percentage of clean energy rises? It's going to dwarf dirty energy jobs by a huge margin. And that's not taking into account the even lower price and greater job creating potential of energy efficiency measures that involve local workers working on individual homes and businesses, creating local jobs and saving potentially huge amounts of energy via negawatts. Instead of adding megawatts, you're adding negawatts, which is negative watts. So has the Republican platform of 2016 changed in recognition of these incredible facts? The answer is obviously no. So if it's not about jobs, and this is proof that it is not, if they're not taking action on this, then why are they and the Trump administration so focused on dirty energy jobs that, in effect, are stifling our potential job market? It's anti-job to be focusing in that area. Why? I can't answer that question. People might say that dirty energy money, such as that from the famous Koch brothers, is pushing these policies because they have great influence on elections via their dirty energy money. And is that the case? Well, the answer to that, whether that's the case or not, is outside of my pay grade. And I would be conjecturing if I were to guess that that was the reason why this is happening. But it's happening for some reason. The Republican platform seems to feel that the dirtiest forms of energy are clean, specifically coal. They actually state that in their platform. They say, and I quote, coal is an abundant, clean, affordable, reliable domestic energy resource. You heard that right. Coal, which is the highest in particulate matter, that particulate matter in the United States, by the way, causes around 160,000 deaths by some estimates. That's clean? That's clean, safe coal energy? No, it's not. And on that note, we will talk about our list. 85 environmental rules being rolled back under the Trump administration.
The New York Times had published this article. 85 rules, regulations that were rolled back either have been completed or are in process. So we're going to go through and read a number of them. We don't have time to go through all of them today, and we'll speak about some of them as we go along. But, you know, you can take your own, just as Bob was saying, look into things. So look into the things that you feel are important that we talk about on this list.
And this analysis, by the way, is based on research from Harvard Law School, Columbia Law School, and other sources.
We begin, the first section is on air pollution and emissions. So these are ones that have been completed already. The first is canceled a requirement for oil and gas companies to report methane emissions.
First, let's understand the global importance of methane in the climate change equation. Methane is a very powerful climate change gas that in the near term can be more than 80 times more powerful in trapping heat in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is more voluminous, methane is stronger. In the last 12 years, the amount of methane being released into the atmosphere has increased dramatically. And that's the result of two things: increased production of meat and dairy products, and the increase in hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as hydrofracking, or fracking. Fracking is the process by which methane and other gases are extracted from shale formations in the ground via the use of high-pressure liquids. These liquids go into the crevices of the shale and cause the methane to come out, so it forces the methane out of these crevices. Hydrofracturing is a very environmentally damaging process since it requires huge amounts of water, from 3 to 6 million gallons per well. And there are more than 1.6 million wells in the United States alone. So 1.6 million times 3 to 6 million gallons. This has resulted in an enormous amount of water pollution and in the release of a lot of methane into the air. Sure, they catch most of it for the use as a fuel, but the process can also be sloppy and result in a lot of methane going into the air we breathe. So that was the global implications of this methane. Regionally, hydrofracking also causes many health problems. According to the NRDC's report, nitrogen oxides and volatile organic compounds form ground-level ozone. In communities where there is a lot of drilling, this can cause respiratory and cardiovascular effects on a regional scale, even for those who don't live in close proximity to wells. Impacts include coughs, shortness of breath, airway and lung inflammation, decreased lung function, worsening of asthma and other respiratory diseases, cardiac arrhythmia, increased risk of heart disease, heart attacks, stroke, increased hospital admissions, and premature mortality. And locally, those living or working closest to wells are at the highest risk. In addition to the previously mentioned health threats, they can also be exposed to diesel particulate matter and other toxins, including carcinogens. As a result, they are also at risk for eye, nose, and throat irritation, brain and nervous system problems, including headaches, lightheadedness and disorientation, blood and bone marrow damage leading to anemia and immunological problems, reproductive system effects, birth defects, and harm to the developing fetus, and cancer. That last one, the locally, is for people living closest to the wells. What most people don't know is that approximately 1 in 4 Americans is now living within a mile of an oil or gas well. And fracking is increasing this dirty industry's reach even further into neighborhoods across the country. Oil and gas companies were required to report their methane emissions. The Trump EPA has canceled this requirement.
You're listening to The Healthy Planet. My name is Bob DiBenedetto on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook.
We're reading from the New York Times article on the rollbacks that have been done during the Trump administration.
And that brings us to number two.
Two, revised and partially repealed an Obama-era rule limiting methane emissions on public lands, including intentional venting and flaring from drilling operations.
So companies are now allowed to release more of this methane into our air, by mistake. Did methane suddenly become less dangerous to us and our atmosphere? You remember the 3 points I just read? No. What has suddenly happened is that the profit of hydrofracking companies has just become even more important than the life support system for our and future generations.
Three, loosened a Clinton-era rule designed to limit toxic emissions from major industrial polluters.
All right, so what are toxic emissions? You pretty much get it from the label, toxic emissions. According to the EPA, these are hazardous air pollutants, also known as toxic air pollutants or air toxics, that are those pollutants that cause or may cause cancer or other serious health effects, such as reproductive effects or birth defects or adverse environmental and ecological effects. If you didn't hear what I said, it's that they are now allowing more toxic emissions to be released by major industrial polluters. These are not benign emissions. So, what might be the benefit of loosening a rule that limited deadly emissions? Once again, we're back to the rule that is governing the decisions of the Trump administration. Short-term profits, Trump, human, and environmental health. And the beneficiaries will be big fossil fuel burning industries today. The losers will be everybody who lives on the planet today and future generations. This change could dramatically weaken limits on toxic heavy metals emitted from power plants and smokestacks. Burning coal releases toxic mercury, and that comes down into rivers and streams, and this poison then accumulates in the food chain. You're eating it, and gets into our bodies. The main source of exposure is through eating contaminated fish, who are also exposed to the mercury in our waters. So if you haven't eaten fish recently, you're ahead of the game. I haven't had fish in 40 years. Yeah, surprise, huh? Mercury is a powerful neurotoxin that can damage the brain and nervous system. Mercury is of special concern to women who are pregnant or thinking of becoming pregnant, since exposure to mercury can cause developmental problems, learning disabilities, and delayed onset of walking and talking in babies and infants. John Walk, the director for clean air issues at the NRDC, said that this is among the most dangerous actions that the Trump EPA has yet taken against public health. Rolling back long-standing protections to allow the greatest increase in hazardous air pollutants in our nation's history is unconscionable. The leader of climate policy initiatives for the Sierra Club said, Trump and Pruitt are essentially creating a massive, Pruitt was the head of the EPA at the time, are essentially creating a massive loophole that will result in huge amounts of toxic mercury, arsenic, and lead being poured into the air we breathe, meaning this change is a threat to anyone who breathes and a benefit only to dangerous corporate polluters.
It's hard to really put your mind around all of this, but it's happening, so we need to be aware.
That's what we got. This is what we've got. This isn't conjecture. This isn't guessing or being afraid of something that is not an objective threat. This is the objective threat that we are facing today as a result of politics, not as a result of leadership. Leadership leads you to a positive place for society. Politics does things that are irrational in order to gain political favor in some way or advantage. And again, who knows why?
Well, certainly with regard to the environment, as we'll see as we continue on. We're not done yet.
This is Bob DiBenedetto. You're listening to the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Keep in mind, this is a show from the year 2019, where we were discussing the impact of the Trump administration's environmental policy on our life support system. So when we're referring to this administration, we're talking about the Trump administration.
Number four, stopped enforcing a 2015 rule that prohibited the use of hydrofluorocarbons, powerful greenhouse gases, in air conditioners and refrigerators. So I'll just say a few words about this. Industry has already shifted to make accommodation for that original 2015 rule. The administration at this point has been sued by a number of states regarding this rule. These hydrofluorocarbons, HFCs, are thousands of times more potent than CO2, although they're shorter lived. Now, an interesting turn of events. In 2017, the Trump administration actually supported the Kigali Amendment, which was a global agreement for countries to reduce their HFCs 80% over the following 30 years. But then in 2018, Scott Pruitt's EPA eliminated the rule for a turnaround. So again, we have to wonder, first supporting, then turning it around. As Bob said, you know, conjecture maybe, but it seems obvious again, we're in that same, whatever it is to do with the fossil fuel industry is good because we're thinking short-term profits, not long-term health. So on to number five. Repealed a requirement that state and regional authorities track tailpipe emissions from vehicles traveling on federal highways. Six, reverted to a weaker 2009 pollution permitting program for new power plants and expansions. Seven, amended rules that govern how refineries monitor pollution in surrounding communities. Eight, directed agencies to stop using an Obama-era calculation of the social cost of carbon that rulemakers use to estimate the long-term economic benefits of reducing carbon dioxide emissions.
When one is assessing the building of a new power generation plant, which happens before they build any plant, they'll look at the initial capital costs of building a coal plant versus, say, a wind farm, and they'll also look at the cost of fuel today and going forward. But that's not a very accurate way to assess the cost of new power plants, because obviously the coal plant is going to cause a lot of pollution, climate change gases, heart and lung diseases, cancer, particulate matter deaths, while the wind turbines will not be burning any dirty fossil fuels. So that's apparent from the start. Climate change is and will have enormous impacts on our society. From extreme weather events, like I mentioned in the past, and we're seeing Dorian just destroyed parts of the Bahamas, and these crazy storms that we've never seen before, and the wildfires, and the droughts, and the sea level rise, and the deaths that are happening from diseases in places where people don't have enough water or food as a result of climate change. So it's a big deal. According to the World Health Organization, about 150,000 deaths per year are resulting from climate change today. And that, of course, is expected to go way up 10 years from now. According to the EPA and others, and they determine this via an extensive process that these impacts are currently and will continue to cost individuals, businesses, and governments hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars. The social cost of carbon, which is where we started this, in the getting rid of that social cost of carbon calculation, is something that takes all of these impacts, all of these environmental, health, human well-being impacts into account and puts a cost to them. So it's been estimated that the social cost of carbon today might be around $50 a ton of carbon that's emitted via smokestacks, etc. Now, the Trump administration doesn't like having to account for the true cost of these dated, dirty forms of energy. And so it's directed its agencies to stop using this measure. In effect, it's basically said that it will assess future energy projects using just half of the equation. And by not taking into account the costs that all of us will pay individually and collectively for decades, and likely for centuries to come.
So again, we're reading from the New York Times article on the rollbacks that have been done during the Trump administration. Onward with the completed rollbacks. Nine, withdrew guidance that federal agencies include greenhouse gas emissions in environmental reviews. Luckily, several district courts have ruled that emissions must be included in such reviews.
Can you imagine not including the largest environmental crisis that's going on in an environmental review?
Yes, we're in crazy world.
Yes, that's where I was going. It's bizarro land.
Number 10. I'm not really laughing. It's, you know, it's, I could be crying too. So 11, proposed rules to end federal requirements that oil and gas companies install technology to inspect for and fix methane leaks from wells, pipelines, and storage facilities.
And going back, of course, I talked all about the global, regional, and local impacts of methane. So they're ending federal requirements that oil and gas companies install technology to inspect for and fix methane leaks. Now, we know that they're bad for everybody all across the board. So why? Are they going to save a few dollars so they don't have to do inspections and make sure that this dangerous material isn't leaking?
Right. Think of how many miles and miles there are of these pipelines, and they inevitably leak. It happens all the time. There are explosions.
It's the rule. It's not
exactly,
the exception.
Exactly. Exactly. So they know that this is going to happen. So not to inspect these is, you know, and having technology that can help so you don't have to have a physical person going along or whatever it might be to help us to stem any kind of leaks initially. Of course, it makes perfect sense to do so rather than not. So number 12, proposed weakening Obama-era fuel economy standards for cars and light trucks. The proposal also challenges California's right to set its own more stringent standards, which other states can choose to follow. Now, just to say a few words about this one, California has been a leader in a lot of ways, not just with environment, but, you know, organic food standards and so forth. And so a lot of states do look to California. California doesn't have the greatest public transit system, I think, as we are all aware. I've heard from my aunt who lived in that area that the traffic is worse there than it is in New York, and that's a little hard to believe. But we do at least have some public transit. So now trying to stop California from setting environmental, gas mileage standards doesn't make a lot of sense. On the other hand, they're trying to push California on their clean air issues. So this is a perfect way for them to do so. Cars are a serious problem in California. Car manufacturers have already been in negotiations and speaking to California. They don't seem to have, or at least a number of them don't seem to have a problem with moving forward with this. It will make them more competitive in the world and in our country, and by the same token, improving our air quality. So really, moving forward on these standards is really the way of the future. Continued economic viability for our car manufacturers and a cleaner planet.
12 other states have now joined California in adopting these more stringent auto emission standards, which is great because the states see that it works. Now, Trump's goal is to eradicate the standards that were agreed upon by state and federal governments, and that means canceling contracts with Ford, Honda, VW, and BMW. Industry agreed with these standards, as you said, Catherine. They wanted more time and flexibility, but they did not want the standards to go away, because if you're not being held to a standard to make your vehicle, to make your product competitive in a global market, you're ending up as the loser. You know, 2025 comes along and the United States is putting out cars that get 37 miles per gallon and everybody else has got 60 miles per gallon. Whose cars do you think are going to be sold?
Pretty clear. The math.
Yep. By the way, I'm going to go back to when the car manufacturers, CEOs, told Trump that what he was doing was not necessary with these automobile standards. He told them that they didn't know what was good for them.
I just don't even know what to say to that.
Yep.
Well, as a Republican, he should honor that, because Republicans are all about states' rights,
aren't
they?
That's true. States'
rights. Smaller federal government.
That's right.
So
some of these issues that we're talking about today are based upon states' rights. And it's stated in their 2016 document stating their position. So, yep, apply that here.
Right.
You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto and Catherine Congdon on the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM. We're talking about the Trump environmental policies from 2016 to 2020.
2013 announced intent to withdraw the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement. Now, the process of withdrawing cannot be completed until 2020. Now, Trump made a big deal about, I'm withdrawing from the accord, when actually in the accord, it's a voluntary formula that we put out there what we're going to do. So all he really had to do is maybe downgrade what we were going to do. He didn't have to make a big drama about, well, I'm pulling out of this accord. He just had to change it to whatever it was, even if it was a minuscule amount. And as I just mentioned, it won't be completed till 2020, although he's spoken about it as if he had done it already.
And by the way, this accord was adopted by nearly every nation in the world in 2015. I think Nicaragua, Syria, and Russia did not originally sign on to the agreement, but have since done so. And Russia formally joins the accord just a week or so ago. So this accord does require all parties to put forward their best efforts through nationally determined contributions. That is nationally determined, like you said, Catherine. We determine what we're going to do, what we're going to live up to, and also you have to commit to strengthening your efforts in the years ahead. And this includes requirements that all parties report regularly on their emissions and on their implementation efforts. And there'll also be a global stock take every 5 years to assess the collective progress towards achieving the purpose of the agreement and to inform further individual actions by the parties who have signed on. And for a little background, the deal aims to substantially reduce global warming greenhouse gas emissions with an aim to limit the rise in global temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels. And they're doing this while further pursuing means to limit the increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's not going to happen, by the way. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we're getting there. That 2 degrees Celsius threshold was chosen because the very best experts, and all of them, have said that the risk for catastrophic consequences from extreme weather to droughts, wildfires, melting ice sheets, and sea level rise, impacts on agricultural outputs and more, increases if we go above that 2 degrees Celsius. Now, the accord provides for a way for developed nations to also assist developing nations in taking on climate mitigation and adaptation efforts, which is a great thing because, look, we created all of this pollution. These little countries, these third world countries, have done very little to create the situation that all of us are now being threatened by. So for us, the wealthy nations, to help the poorer nations is just the right thing to do. It's justice. And it's right according to any system of ethics or any religion to help those that you've hurt. And that's what this says that we're doing. So strengthening that commitment to these poorer countries is the right thing to do by any standards. Now, Trump is not guessing here. He's a climate denier. And he claims that climate change is a hoax perpetuated by China. He doesn't know the difference between weather and climate. In some of his recent statements that were just hard to believe. When he announced his intent to withdraw in 2015, he says, we don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore. And they won't be. They won't be. He thought they'd laugh at us for being part of an accord that everybody was involved in. He thought they would laugh at us for doing something that every major scientific organization on the planet says that we need to do immediately. The Trump administration's formal position on Paris is that the United States is withdrawing unless we can re-enter on terms that are more favorable to our country. Donald, we created the terms. And that, too, is a misunderstanding of the deal because the terms were deliberately flexible. And the Trump administration has not articulated any other options that are more appealing than what we entered the accord on. So I don't buy it, and it's not because I don't trust him, even though I don't, based upon his actions and his words. But I don't buy it because they have not shown any reason for us to believe that it's because the conditions weren't right.
Right, when we could set our own conditions.
We set our own conditions, right?
You know, I mean, But maybe things will turn around. We can always keep our hope there.
Come on, Donald. We're pulling for you. Do the right thing.
Yep. Number 14, proposed repeal of the Clean Power Plan, which would have set strict limits on carbon emissions from coal and gas-fired power plants. In April 2019, the EPA sent a replacement plan, which would let states set their own rules. They sent that to the White House for budget review in April.
The first thing to understand here is that when you hear the EPA is regulating carbon, it's doing so because it has to. The current EPA does not want to regulate carbon. They've got a former oil industry lobbyist running the EPA, okay? So the Trump administration either does not believe the vast majority of the world's scientists who say that climate change is dangerous and the results of human activity, or they just don't care. One of the two. I don't know which is worse. But again, they have to do something about it, since in 2007, the Supreme Court ruled that if the EPA finds that greenhouse gases are a threat to public health, it must regulate them as air pollutants under the Clean Air Act. And the EPA in 2009 did indeed find that greenhouse gases are a danger to public health, because it's obvious. As a result, the EPA is required to, number one, regulate greenhouse gases from vehicles, two, regulate it from new sources of greenhouse gases, such as refineries and power plants, and three, stationary sources of greenhouse gases, such as were covered by the Clean Power Plan. Trump's EPA's Clean Power Plan replacement is called the Affordable Clean Energy Proposal. Under the old plan, the real Clean Power Plan, the federal government set targets for states. Under the Trump replacement, states can set targets for themselves. Trump's plan also restricts what states can do to push coal-fired plants to become cleaner. Hey, what's going on with states' rights? The Clean Power Plan's goal was to cut U.S. This is the original plan, was to cut U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by 32% compared to 2005 levels by 2030. Trump's new plan, instead of reducing by 32%, would reduce emissions between 0.7 and 1.5% in that same time frame. That is anemic, inconsequential, not enough, ridiculous, way under anything that's considered to be meaningful. According to the EPA's own calculations, the new proposal would lead to upward of 1,400 additional premature deaths and 48,000 new cases of asthma each year because of increased levels of air pollution.
Yes, a lot of times people think climate change, and if they don't believe that there's climate change, they kind of dismiss everything. But there's this whole other element, like you were mentioning, about particulate matter and so forth, you know, people getting asthma, people getting cancer. So we have to think of the whole picture. So number 15, again, we're reading from this New York Times article, 85 rollbacks from the Trump administration to our environmental policies in this country. 15, proposed eliminating Obama-era restrictions that in effect required newly built coal power plants to capture carbon dioxide emissions.
Why capture them if they're not a problem? You know, it's cheaper. Clean coal. It's clean because all the pollutants go in the air.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about cleaning out any scrubbers or anything
right.
like
it's
that.
It's much cleaner.
And then next, on to proposed 16, proposed a legal justification for weakening an Obama-era rule that limited mercury emissions from coal power plants.
Mercury emissions are dangerous. And again, anything that's dangerous is not being addressed. And you get mercury, as I said, the main source of mercury ingestion is via our food in fish products. So one way to reduce that amount that's going into the air from coal plants and getting into our diets and into breast milk and into babies is by cutting back on the amount of fish that one eats.
Well, doesn't the mercury also fall on fields where maybe cows might graze? And could it
does.
Be in the cow's milk as well?
Yes. The most concentrated place to get any pollutants that are in our atmosphere or in our water is via animal products because they bioaccumulate those toxic substances in their fat tissue. And when we eat them, we're eating not just one dose, but we're eating what they've accumulated throughout their lifetimes. So yes, animal products are the problem.
Yeah, like the food chain.
Yep.
The top of the food chain. 21. Announced a rewrite of an Obama-era rule meant to reduce air pollution in national parks and wilderness areas.
After all, when you go to a national park or a wilderness area, what you really want is some good old particulate matter in your lungs.
Right, and some smog. And
smog is nice at national parks.
Right, no clear views for
otherwise,
miles.
Yeah, the views are overrated. And if you don't have smog or dirty air, it doesn't feel like home. That's the way I see it.
24. Proposed limiting the ability of individuals and communities to challenge EPA-issued pollution permits before a panel of agency judges.
You know, having a say in matters like whether there's going to be a power plant or some other pollution in your neighborhood, it's overrated. By not having that power, which is proposed limiting the ability of individuals and communities to challenge EPA-issued pollution permits before a panel of agency judges. By not having that power, it really enables all of us to relax a little more. I think that's really the bottom line.
Unless you're in a certain particular neighborhood where they're building one, right?
Yes, but you know, Catherine, that doesn't impact most wealthy people.
No, that's true. That's true, actually. It's been shown time and again that minorities, poor people who are various areas, they don't have a voice.
And they are much more likely to live near factories, highways, and power plants, to the point where it's unfortunate that people in power do not live in the neighborhoods that are most impacted by these issues. And therefore, they have a much less of an interest in acting because it just does not hit home.
Right.
Literally.
Right. A lack of interest, a lack of awareness. Drilling and extraction. On to the next section of this New York Times report. Completed, 25 made significant cuts to the borders of two national monuments in Utah and recommended border and resource management changes to several more. So I don't know if anyone here has been out to the national monuments in Utah, but they're really irreplaceable. And it's very, very fragile land out there. So if you start drilling out there, pumping oil, whatever else might be going on, mining, there's no turning back. You know, they're really jewels and treasures of this country that we should be protecting. 26. Rescinded water pollution regulations for fracking on federal and Indian lands. And 27.
Go to 26 for
a
second.
Yeah, let's stop for a minute there.
Yeah. You know, none of our lawmakers are living on Indian lands, right?
Well, and they're sovereign lands.
Few of them, I should say.
I do not understand how we can just run roughshod unless it's, I'm sorry, you know, just history continuing on and repeating itself, but over the sovereignty of Native American lands.
Yeah.
It's kind of beyond me.
It's beyond, yes.
But again, it comes all back to allowing the polluters to do whatever they want.
Yep.
27 scrapped a proposed rule that required mines to prove they could pay to clean up future pollution. Now, why wouldn't we want them to prove that? Unfortunately, too often, what we've seen time and again, and here right on Long Island, where, you know, water's been polluted, various places around, and then the companies leave, and the taxpayer is left to pay for the cleanup, if a cleanup can actually be done.
If it's even possible.
Yeah, in some cases, it's not really, you're trying to mitigate something, but you're maybe not going to be successful.
The other thing is Republicans, look, you're in the party of personal responsibility, right? Right. That's what the Republican Party says that it is. If you're allowing a mine to go into an area and say, you know, we're going to mine this area, but if something goes wrong, we can't clean it up. First of all, those people who are running that mine are going to operate differently if they are not responsible or able to handle the cleanup. And two, again, where did personal responsibility go? Or a free market economy? A free market economy means that you clean up your mess and you pay for the resources that you're using. And the Republicans are all about a free market economy. It's stated in their position that I was reading earlier today. And so, look, this is the free market economy. Get a company in who's going to do mining, who can afford to pay for the cleanup, and who is responsible for paying for the cleanup.
Right. It's all the cost of doing business. You have to look at the total picture. This leads into 28, withdrew a requirement that Gulf oil rig owners prove they could cover the costs of removing rigs once they have stopped producing. So we've got the same thing.
Here we are again, yeah. So why would you remove that requirement? A company can go in, put up a rig, and then when it stops producing, say, sorry, can't afford to take it away.
Right. We're just going to leave it there. It's going, instead, it will go to our profits.
Right. And why would they do that? Why would that be something that anybody would want?
Well, certainly not anyone who's living anywhere near the Gulf Coast.
Yep.
So, 29, approved construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline less than a mile from the Standing Rock Reservation. Under the Obama administration, the Army Corps of Engineers had said it would explore alternative routes. But unfortunately, the Trump administration doesn't think that that's necessary. Again, we're coming back to the sovereignty of the Sioux Nation in this instance. 31, changed how the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission considers the indirect effects of greenhouse gas emissions in use of pipelines.
Yeah, so if you're putting in a pipeline and you don't consider the enormous damage that will come as the result of that pipeline, that damage in terms of greenhouse gases, it's going to entirely change the cost-benefit analysis. And if you're not considering it, you're looking at less than one half of the equation. And if you're a mathematician or a scientist or a person with a head on your shoulders, you can't do an equation that's missing half of the equation. So this is not something that should be allowed. And of course, when we're talking about pipelines, some of the oil that like was coming down from the Keystone pipeline is some of the dirtiest, most polluting oils. And so to not look at the impacts of burning those oils in general, or to see the impact of what it's doing to Canada, it's creating a vast wasteland, just makes no sense whatsoever.
Right, right. And that was another issue with the Dakota Access Pipeline. As we just mentioned previously, these pipelines leak inevitably. They're just, you know, pipes. And that was a question as to when that would happen, and there were a lot of people depending on the water in that area. So 32, permitted the use of seismic air guns for gas and oil exploration in the Atlantic Ocean. The practice, which can kill marine life and disrupt fisheries, was blocked under the Obama administration.
Now, these seismic air guns are not little guns that affect, you know, a block or two. They're very, very loud. They're louder than anything in the sea, and they can cripple, hurt, kill animals in the oceans. How far can they go? These seismic air gun blasts can be heard a distance equivalent to the distance between New York and Las Vegas. And it hurts whales and dolphins. It's just horrible to think that this is an environment that we're kind of clueless about. We think, oh, you know, if there's a noise a mile away, it doesn't matter. But when the noise is the substance that we're floating in and we're used to it being a certain way, and then you add these huge sounds that cause all kinds of problems, it's just horrible to think about these poor animals.
Right. Even just disorienting them.
Right.
By the sounds.
Exactly. And why would we do this if we had a really good reason, like we really need to find this energy? No, but the fact is that we know, based upon every bit of science that we have, that this energy should stay in the ocean. We should leave it alone. And yet, because of our gluttonous attitude, where greed becomes the instrumental operating principle, we're going after these oil reserves in the ocean at the expense of everything that lives in the ocean, and for no good reason.
Right. We should have learned from the Horizon deep water incident in the Gulf, just how bad it can be, just like you mentioned Fukushima. We have to look at the examples that have happened just in the recent years and move from there.
Absolutely.
So 33, loosened offshore drilling safety regulations implemented by the Obama administration following the 2010 Deepwater Horizon explosion and oil spill. The revised rules include reduced testing requirements for blowout prevention systems. This makes less than zero sense because these were...
Fits well in this list then, right?
Right. But these were initiated in response to that Deepwater Horizon explosion and oil spill. So to reverse those makes no sense at all. We don't want to have another circumstance like that. Then moving into in process. 34. Completed preliminary environmental reviews to clear the way for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So again, it seems like we're coming back to the same thing over and over. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, a pristine place, we do not need drilling there. There's no turning back, no changing that back to a pristine place once we start drilling there. We saw what happened in the Gulf. We've seen what's happened elsewhere. And in Canada, as Bob had mentioned. 35.
But what happens when you drill, by the way, in a place where it's really cold? What happens if you put something in your freezer? Does it break down quickly? Or does it last longer?
It lasts longer until it starts melting and the permafreeze unfreezes.
Yeah, well, yeah, that undesirable event, yes. But basically, when you pollute in those areas, it stays around a long time.
Mm.
It's a much more fragile area. You know, we had an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, which is horrible. It was horrendous. It was painful every day watching the oil that was coming out of the sea and just polluting and causing problems. But it is warmer down there. If that same spill happened in the Arctic, it would have been just so many times worse because things don't break down in the cold.
Mm.
It would have been around forever.
Right. Well, in the Gulf, they also used a lot of very toxic chemicals to deal with the oil.
Yep.
So that wasn't so great.
That was a horrible event. And again, it's not the exception. When we drill for oil, when we put oil in pipelines, when we put oil on ships, there are accidents because humans are not perfect. And part of the nice thing about it, anybody, is that they're not perfect, that we have ways that we kind of miss details in certain ways. You know, some guy on the ship falls asleep at the wheel and hits something and it causes a disastrous oil spill. Or they go too far onto and they hit another barge. Or they go too far onto land. There are just so many different reasons for all the worst oil spills that we've seen in history. And they're all reasons that have to do with us not being perfect. And so they will never stop because we will never be perfect.
Exactly. Human error. What can we say? We are human.
We are human. There it is.
So 35 proposed opening most of America's coastal waters to offshore oil and gas drilling, but delayed the plan after a federal judge ruled that Mr. Trump's reversal of an Obama-era ban on drilling in the Arctic Ocean was unlawful. So they were even, I mean, talking about the Atlantic coast where we are. Can you imagine having all oil rigs off of our coastline here?
Which they would like, by the way.
As much as I'd love to see wind turbines everywhere, they'd like to see oil rigs, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, it looks like we're going to stop for the day. We've covered a whole lot of issues and given you a pretty good idea of the depth and the breadth of what's going on in terms of the destruction of the environmental regulations and, in turn,
the planned destruction of our life support system. Under the Donald Trump administration between 2016 and 2020, and fortunately, much of this has turned around since that time.
So on that note, we're going to sign off. My name is Bob DiBenedetto. I want to thank you for listening to The Healthy Planet. I'm here with Catherine Congdon. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
www.healthyplanet.com. HealthyPlanetUSA.org, HealthyPlanetUSA.org. And be sure to like our Facebook page by looking for Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, be kind to those around you, including those who have four legs, including those who are swimming in the sea, and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share. Good night.